I'm Rachel.
And I'm Kelly.
And this is What You Should Read,
the podcast where we should all over our books.
We're back. I feel like it's been a million years since we've recorded. We only took a week off, but it feels longer.
It's like that meme from the Titanic. It's been 84 years.
2020.
Yeah.
What else is there to say?
The longest decade of my entire life, 2020.
Well, it is so good to be back. We're excited for our episode today. We're going to be talking about books by Indigenous authors in celebration of Indigenous Peoples Day, which was yesterday when this podcast episode drops. But first, Rachel, what are you reading?
So after I finished Pillars of the Earth a couple weeks ago, I've had this really weird book hangover where I'm reading, but my reading is all over the place. I'm basically a cheaty where I can't decide what to read. So I have a million books going at one time. But so one of the things I'm reading right now is Chocolate Chip Cookie Murder.
Aww.
By Joanne Fluke. It's the first in a series, the Hannah Swenson mystery. It has cookie recipes all throughout the book, first of all.
Are you making them as you go?
No, but I'm going to write them down because it's a library book. So I'm going to write down the ones that sound the best to me.
Yeah.
And
just to interrupt super fast, I'm sorry. It is my understanding that a Hall family tradition is cookie making around Christmas. Mm-hmm. Might a bonus Hall named Kelly be able to get some of these cookies later?
Oh, sure. I could send you some.
We could film a bonus episode of us making cookies. We'll probably be doing separate Christmases this year because of coronavirus, but we could do something.
Yeah, we'll figure something out for sure. Yeah. Figure out a way to get Kelly some cookies, definitely.
Yes, please.
Yes, that's the important thing.
Yes.
What I should eat is your cookies.
Yes.
Yeah, I also found out that, of course, this has been made into a Hallmark movie. So Hannah, the main character, of course, owns a bakery / coffee shop. And, of course, is the smartest person in town, in her small town. And I don't know, some of it is like, ugh, because it's written in like the late 90s or whatever. It was published in 2000. And I just am like, you know, oh, there's this woman character who's a working mother, and it's like, oh, she's not very maternal because she has a job. I'm like, what? Okay, can we just not? But anyway, so I'm reading that. I'm listening to the audiobook All Boys Aren't Blue by George Johnson and George M. Johnson. And it's really good. It's his memoir about being Black and queer and just his sort of journey. And, you know, a lot throughout the book, he's like, you know, a lot of this is very uncomfortable for me to write, but I want to do it so that people like me can read it and get answers to questions that I had growing up and never got answered. So it's a really interesting book. I'm reading a couple of other things, but I just need to stop. Who's next?
Kelly, what are you reading?
I am reading something for our spooky Halloween episode. There's Someone Inside Your House by Stephanie Perkins. It's so fun. It's actually a reread, but it's basically what would happen if you took the movie Scream, but also threw in like a new girl moves to town and finds awesome friends and a boyfriend. So it's like a romantic comedy meets Scream. And it should not work, but it absolutely does.
Doesn't sound that spooky then.
I mean, there's like a serial killer who's straight up splatter movie killing teenagers.
Okay.
In school. So yeah, I mean, it is. It's super gross and sweet.
I envisioned the spooky books and horror episode where we will have our guest, Emma, who is an author, and you, Emma and Kelly, will be recommending spooky books. And I just worry that your pitches to me are going to not really accurately convey how scary they are.
My whole goal in life is to get people to love scary things as much as I do. So I actually really don't undersell things, because if I do that and you read something and it terrifies you, you will never listen to me again.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to be like, hey, you know what we should watch is Midsommar, the Ari Aster movie. It's great. She goes on vacation. She becomes a May Queen. You will love it. You will hate it.
Okay. Well, I am reading The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue by V.E. Schwab. It's gorgeous. I am, let's see, I think 60 pages in, and I was up late last night because I had insomnia, so I should have just been reading this, but I was trying to go to sleep, but I'm trying to savor it too. I'm trying not to let it go too fast because it's so good. It is about a girl or a woman, Addie LaRue, who made a deal with the devil that she lives forever. But part of the deal is that no one will remember who she is. Like, she'll meet someone, they have a quick convo, and as soon as they leave, they immediately forget her. So she's sort of doomed to this life where she can live forever and she can see all these things that she has, like wanderlust, her character, who the story starts, or her life starts in France in the early 18th century. But no one remembers her, so it's a very lonely life. But it's just so amazing. I don't know. It's definitely going to be one of my top books of the year.
Ooh, yay. I'm sorry, Rachel.
No, go ahead.
I got that from Book of the Month Club too, and a friend of the pod, Kathy, recommended it when we were talking about the books we were excited for, not last week with our fall reading lists, but before, and it does sound really good, and I can't wait to read it. Sorry, Rachel.
No, it's okay. I was just saying it sounds like Julia's kind of book for sure.
Yeah. It's specifically made for me. Immortality, France, there is a magic bookshop in there somewhere. So speaking of our fall TBRs though, quick check-in. How's everyone doing so far in their progress?
I mean, mind your business.
It's barely up.
Well, for me, it's like I said earlier, I'm just a cheaty about reading in general right now. Like, I just can't focus on one book. So yeah.
Yeah. I'm a total cheaty right now. Let's move on.
Okay. So we have a ton of book news today. I'm gonna start with, okay, I'm sorry, listeners, this has quite a bit of exposition. There is a book prize called the Women's Prize for literature. And the reason that this came about is because the Booker Award didn't honor any women. So probably multiple years,
right,
no women were honored. So a bunch of people were like, okay, well then let's do something that only talks about great books written by women, which is very cool. Okay, so in 2019, they nominated author Ikwasuke Amizi for their debut novel, which is called Freshwater. And the cool thing about this is that they are the first trans non-binary author to be nominated for the Women's Prize, which is awesome. So they wanted to talk about the sophomore novel, which is The Death of Vivek Oji, which is getting so much attention. It's apparently freaking amazing. I have it, but haven't read it yet, as I do. But they wanted to make it clear that the Women's Prize, in order to be nominated, you have to identify as a woman and sex as defined by law, which means that if you are a trans woman, you don't count because you are not a woman as defined by law, which is straight up bullshit.
Yeah.
So Amizi was like, yeah, I'm sorry. I don't want to be part of this. Do not consider my novel. And okay, if you want to have a prize that's for women, fine. But trans women are women. You don't get to gatekeep about who counts. And, you know, you can't expect a trans non-binary author to basically tell you biologically, quote unquote, what they are. Yeah. That's disgusting and unacceptable.
Well, and I read about it, and apparently the Women's Prize replied and said, in their view, the woman as defined by law could mean either cis women or trans women, but it's still just such an exclusionary rule, like requirement that you define your gender or your sex as defined by law. And that is, as the author says, a weapon used against trans women all the time.
Right.
And any person who is a gender minority should be welcome for this book to be nominated to this book prize. The people who run this book prize should be happy to honor writing from all genders that are traditionally marginalized. And it was just such a blatant like power move and weird and just unsettling.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, how often does the law get it right nowadays for trans people anyway? So,
right.
Or for you said, minority genders in general, that's just a weird way to put it, because we know that the law doesn't protect all people.
And what if you're in a trans person who's in a state that doesn't recognize trans rights? I mean, that is happening right now, or a country that doesn't recognize, like, which law are we going by? I mean, it's just,
right.
It's not up to the law to define who people are.
Yes. And I mean, just, it should be sex as defined by, I don't know the exact best wording for it, but like defined as how you identify.
Gender identity, right.
Yeah. Because right now we can't count on the law to protect any sort of minority.
Right.
So
the more nitpicking we do about legal sex status is just making things worse and more dangerous for people.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. But in award news that's better, the MacArthur Genius Grant announced their 21 winners, and three of them are Black authors. Pod favorite N.K. Jemisin, who we have discussed multiple times.
We will talk about again on this episode. Foreshadow.
Timely teases. one of my personal favorites, Jacqueline Woodson, and essayist Tressie McMillan Cottom. And she wrote a book of essays, Thick, which I have but have not read.
She also wrote a book called Lower Ed, which is about for-profit education. And I read it. She's a sociologist, and I was so thrilled to see two sociologists, actually. She and Forrest Stewart both won MacArthur Genius Grant this year, and I work sort of in the sociology world, so it was really exciting to see that. And her book, Lower Ed, is so fascinating because I do work in higher education, and it was just interesting to see the curtain pulled back on the for-profit college, like Phoenix University or any of those online, Strayer, just like how they operate. It's really, it was illuminating. So she's great. And I can't wait to read Thick.
Yeah. And the cool thing about the prize, winners get $625,000, and it's spread out over, I think, 5 years. But I mean, what a great way to reward people who are doing amazing work.
Yeah. Yep.
Definitely. Yep.
Good call, MacArthur Foundation. I loved when the announcement was made too. Twitter was just like so happy for the geniuses. It was just such a nice day.
Yeah. And speaking of nice days, Mindy Kaling has a new series of essays out. There are six. And if you have Prime or Audible, you can read and listen to them for free, which is fantastic. And also for Mindy Kaling, she just had a baby boy. His name is Spencer and born in early September.
Yay.
Yay.
I'm excited about both of those things.
Me too.
I loved her book, Is Everyone Hanging Out Without Me and Other Concerns? Just yes. Such a perfect little comedy book.
Yeah. Yeah, yes. She's great.
Her essays are just fantastic.
Yeah.
She's mm-hmm. one of my imaginary best friends.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is that it for book news, Kelly? That was a lot.
It was a lot. I believe we're done.
Good job. It's like when you take a week off, things just pile up.
So many things.
All right. So we are moving on to the next segment, which is recent acquisitions. And I'm going to start with Julia.
Okay. I have some exciting recent acquisitions. So I have my book of the month box came, and I got, of course, The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue by B.E. Schwab. I also got another one of my fall most anticipated, which was A Deadly Education by Naomi Novik. It's lesson one of the Scholomance or Scholomance series. I can't tell, but it's a creepy, dark school of magic. There was some recent Twitter activity that I haven't had time to investigate about some problematic passages in the book. So I'm going to look into that. I know the author has posted an apology about it on Twitter. So we'll see. But the cover is very nice. Mm-hmm. The third book in my book of the month box was The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, which is obviously one of these really hyped books that everyone loves. I know, Rachel, you love this book.
I've never read it.
What?
I've never read it.
Oh, I thought you did.
I did. Oh, I love it. I love it so much. It is my favorite of hers. I have been brutally peer pressuring everyone I know to read it. So I don't know how I missed you. I'm sorry about that.
I know. I'm sure you have, but I hadn't gotten around to it, but I'm sure I'll love it. And finally, I had pre-ordered Spoiler Alert, which is another one of my most anticipated fall books by Olivia Dade. It's a romance, and it features a actor who's in a Game of Thrones type show and a woman who writes fan fiction about it. And there's, you know, secret identities. So cosplay, it just sounds really cute. So, and I liked the cover, so I wanted it. And that's it for me. Oh, wait, no.
Oh,
all right.
My signed copy of, yes, The Book of Two Ways by Jodi Picoult, which is our December book club pick. So we are starting a book club on the What You Should Read podcast. So for the first episode of December, we will be reading The Book of Two Ways by Jodi Picoult. So join us, read along with us if you want.
Yay. I also got that.
Nice.
Kelly, what have you acquired?
Oh my gosh. I found out about the most perfect Kelly book ever. So Meg Hofdahl and Kelly Florence wrote a book called The Science of Stephen King. And what that is they talk about all the books that he's written and how this stuff works. So for example, his book Insomnia, they discuss about how lack of sleeping would actually affect your body. Probably not well. And in Thinner, where somebody loses weight incredibly rapidly after irritating an older Romani woman and she curses him, we will learn how curses and legends actually would work. So I am super excited. I have not started it yet. I will be starting it very, very soon. It would have been one of my five to read before the end of the year if I had known about it in time.
Yeah, good.
And I am still in Salisbury, but I believe my Jodi Picoult, The Book of Two Ways, is waiting patiently for me back in my home. I hope.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah. All right. Are you guys ready?
Yes.
All right.
So remember last week I said that I was not buying books the rest of the year. So far I have stuck with it. Because one of the things that I had spent a ton of money on was this set of Anne of Green Gables books that I ordered through Book Depository. They're beautiful. So a couple of them I had to get as Penguin Classics. Not had to. I mean, I love them, but they don't match the rest. But it's the two that she wrote later in her life, L.M. Montgomery, but they fit in the middle of the series. So And of Windy Willows or Windy Poplars, depending on what continent you're ordering it from, and of Ingleside. And then I have the rest of them in these beautiful, like, editions. If you're watching on YouTube, I'm holding them up, but they have these beautiful like etchings on the covers. And they're really pretty pastel colors. I just love them so much. So that's one of the other books I didn't say that I was currently reading, but I'm on Anne of Avonlea right now. I just wanted to do a whole read through of the series. So
that sounds so fun.
Yeah. So I got those. And I got a few more library books. So The Troop by Nick Cutter. It seems scary. So I'm not sure how I would like it, but it's about this Boy Scout troop that's going on their annual camping trip over a weekend. And this, like, it's described as a shockingly thin, disturbingly pale, and voraciously hungry man in unspeakable torment, you know, stumbles upon their campsite one night and just sets them on this whole, like, scary adventure, I guess. So I don't know too much about it. I don't know. I'm going to try. I don't read many scary books because I do get nightmares, but I'm going to try. So we'll see. I also got Outlander by Diana Gabaldon from the library, and I tried reading this on audiobook a few years ago and couldn't get into it. I don't know if it was the narrator or what was happening, but I thought I would try again on print. It's just kind of a book candy thing. And then I also got Ellen Hildebrand's Summer of 69 from the library. So I got a lot of books from the library. This part of my cheatiness of late with my book hangover, I've been, like I said, I've still been reading a lot, but it's like, I'm picking up a million books at a time. So I don't have that much focus.
You need to find that one book that you just can't put down, you know, and that'll.
Which I did. And I read it and I'm still having a book hangover.
Yeah.
Because I read it in like a day, but I'll talk about that in the next segment.
Okay. Yes. Well, speaking of the next segment, that's going to be our What You Should Read part of the episode. We will be discussing our favorite books by Indigenous authors that we recommend. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about those books. And today we're talking about books by Indigenous authors. So we're each going to recommend a few books that we think you should read. So Kelly, do you want to start us off?
Yes. Okay. So my first book is There, There by Tommy Orange. It is basically multiple perspectives centered around a powwow. And it's all Indigenous characters, obviously. And because their ages vary. Some people are very connected to Indigenous culture and their history and their family history, and some people aren't. And I thought that was such a really interesting choice because I feel like I never really think about how people would be able to connect with their culture when the government did such, I don't want to say incredible job because that sounds like I'm praising it, but did such a thorough job, we'll say, of being able to wipe out so much of everything connected to it.
Yeah.
Where I know a lot of I mean, obviously, a lot of times these indigenous people would be forced off their land into different places, and children were kidnapped and put in schools and forced to learn the English language and just all this stuff. It's completely just disgusting. And I like to think that things like that wouldn't happen now, but I know better.
Right.
But there is also a shooting connected with this, which I'm mentioning because it's a pretty traumatic part. There's like a shooting at the powwow. Mm. And we don't know how a lot of people fare. It's got an open ending, but it's such a great book in a lot of ways, and it's very short. It's only around 300 pages.
Oh wow!
So just a wonderful, wonderful book.
That sounds great.
Yeah. I'm surprised you guys haven't read it actually, because
yeah.
You guys reading your great important books while I'm over here. Not that.
We'll get right on it.
Kelly, you read important books too.
I mean, I do, but.
Yeah, you do.
Not as often or as many.
So my first pick is my newest favorite book. It's called Winter Counts by David Hesco Wambly Whedon, and it is a novel. It's his debut. So it's about a man called Virgil Wounded Horse. He lives on the Rosebud Indian Reservation in South Dakota, and he is the local enforcer, quote unquote. He is basically a hired vigilante because crime on Indian reservations is mostly policed by the federal police, federal government, and anything short of murder, they basically ignore. Mm. So, sexual assault, child molestation, things like that don't get prosecuted on these reservations. So the families of the victims will hire this guy to like beat up the perpetrators and scare them into not doing it again, basically. So that's how he makes his living. And he one day gets hired by one of the tribal council members to look into this drug cartel that's been trafficking black tar heroin onto the reservation. And it sets him on this road of trying to figure out what's going on. And it's just a very intense, like, crime thriller. He gets very personal with it. There's, family members that are affected by it. And oh my gosh, it's just the whole thing. It's so good. It's like the closest thing I can compare it to that I've read is the Paul Dwyeran series, the Mike Bowditch series, which is about a gay warden in Maine who doesn't play by the rules. And it definitely leaves it on, not a cliffhanger, but like a feeling that this could be a series.
I was just going to say, is it a series?
And I hope it is. Yeah. Like, I haven't heard officially if it is, but I want more. I want more of this. It is so good.
If it's a crime thriller investigation, it definitely should be.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I can definitely see it, going down that road. So, Winter Counts. Very good. I recommend.
Okay, my first recommendation. I cannot stop talking about how amazing this book is. It is Black Sun by Rebecca Roanhorse, which comes out today, October 13th. So I got an advanced e-galley from NetGalley, and I was so excited because it is one of my most anticipated fall books. And this book is the first in a series, and she has written and created an epic fantasy based on the early Americas, inspired by their the cultures of the early Americas. And it is just, it blew my mind this book was on par for me with N.K. Jemisin's The Broken Earth trilogy. So if you loved The Fifth Season and the books in that series, I think that you would really like Black Sun. Basically, it is told from multiple POVs, and the big storyline is there's this man who's very mysterious, and he's blind, and he's on this ship that this crew is traveling to the city of Tova, which is kind of like the central city. It's the kind of the religious center of this world that we're in. And the crew doesn't know why they're transporting him. They just know he's very important, and they've been given a lot of gold. And the captain is a woman named Ziala, who is a teak woman. And in the teak society, it's an all-female society. They're basically mermaids, I guess, or sirens. They have a song that they use to control the sea. But they also are very discriminated against. People like have these like prejudices against the teak. And so she was my favorite POV. She was just so like confident, and body, and just like, she's captaining the ship and it's all men except for her. So that's the kind of main storyline, but there are all these different things going on. One of the POVs is the high priestess in Tova, there's an assassination attempt against her. It's just, there's all these different things going on, and it all comes together in such a magical way at the end. The writing hooked me from the very beginning. There is, in the first scene of the book, I will say content warning for child abuse. So just to like warn people about that, but it is a very powerful scene and it is very necessary to the storyline, I think. The other thing I loved about this book was great LGBTQ and great trans representation. There are multiple characters in the book who do not identify as male or female. They identify as a third gender, and it's just not really remarked upon. It's just, you know, presented, and Rebecca Roan Horse uses a variety of pronouns for these characters. It was just really nice to see that just like folded in as if it was, you know, normal, which it is. I can't say enough good things about this book. It was so, so good. And the ending, I was like, wait, I need the next book right now, because you can't end it like that. So I need it now. Please write it fast. One of the things that really struck me about this book was her author's note at the end about how she wishes there were more fantasy books set in the Americas or inspired by the Americas. And so many epic fantasy books, it's like they're all set in like some fake version of England, right? And very Western influenced. And in her note, she says, you know, it still seems incredibly rare to find a fantasy inspired by the Americas. I think part of the reason is the persistent myth that the indigenous cultures pre-conquest were primitive and had little to offer, when the opposite is true. Here were master architects who built massive pyramids that rivaled anything in Egypt and created citywide sewer systems when London was still tossing its waste in the streets. Here they built high-rises that housed thousands. Here they tracked the equinox, the solstice, and the movement of the heavens with stunning accuracy. They wove cotton and traded turquoise and shell and feathers and cacao along trade routes that stretched across continents. They lived and laughed and loved. They were, in a word, epic. So that just, you know, really struck me and just sort of summed up why I think this book is so great and important, and I highly, highly recommend it. So that's Black Sun by Rebecca Roan Horse.
Out today.
Out today.
Okay, so my next book is Carrie by Toni Jensen. It is nonfiction. It is a series of vignettes or essays connected with her experience with gun violence.
Oh.
And it ranges from all these different things. Like one chapter, she's a child hanging out with her friends, and they, for whatever reason, have a BB gun and they try to shoot a frog, and the bullet ricochets from the ground and goes into her ankle. And I mean, she's, you know, she's fine. It's a BB, whatever. But she talks about all these other things. In one, she's living in this neighborhood and her next door neighbor is essentially hated by everybody else in the neighborhood. And she tries to not do that because she said, you know, I figured out that when people call women difficult, they just mean, you know, they do things I don't like and they insist on living their life in their own terms, which is true. But also, you know, most of the time it's just that. But sometimes it's that the person is maybe not mentally well. And it was that case with her neighbor who ended up basically murdering somebody. One of the things that I loved about this is every chapter she has Webster's definitions for things. And it's very interesting the way that language can be used to mean different things, obviously. But she also has so many statistics for things. And I know I texted you guys and early one morning and ruined your entire day with this one. So now I'm going to do it for everybody. So if you are murdered, 75% of the time, it's someone you know. You know, like it might be someone you know really well. It could be, you know, a parent or a sibling or your spouse, whatever, like a coworker. Mm-hmm. It's probably someone you know. It may not be someone you know that well, like the cashier at your supermarket, whatever. Of the other 25%, if you are killed by a stranger, a third of the time it's police homicide, which is just absolutely staggering. And I was reading it and I thought, like, this absolutely cannot be true. And I looked it up. It's true. just in case, put a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah.
But I don't read much nonfiction, so I cannot say definitively that this is the best nonfiction of the year, but I can say that for me personally, this is the book that I will be thinking about for the rest of the year. And, you know, yes, okay, it's October. It's not like I read it January 1st and I'm like, this is the book I'm not getting over. But it's just incredibly powerful. And I think that we don't think of the way that things intersect. And for example, she is an Indigenous author. She can pass for white, but, you know, she's Indigenous. And the way that she talks about racism and sexism and just everything is just powerful. And the other thing I texted you guys that I will not share with everybody is when she's pregnant, she is convinced that she's carrying a boy. And it's actually, she learns that it's a girl, but she mentions that she knows the phrase arrange your face. And it's something that every woman just, you know, we all know what that means. And she realizes that part of why she was so sure she was having a boy is that she wants someone whose life would be his own, including the muscles of his face. Oh. And it's just such a powerful thing. So I would definitely recommend.
Damn.
Yeah.
Whew. Rachel, you're next.
I'm going to wait a second. Will's going to make a cup of coffee.
Okay.
Will, you didn't text Julia back.
I will take care of it by the end of today.
Take care of it?
What does that mean?
Thanks for putting me on your to-do list.
Yeah. Your list of chores.
I don't text back anyone.
He doesn't even text me, so.
I mean, I am bad about texting back, too, so I deserve it.
I was going to take back something witty, but then I lost it, so I was like, oh, I'll take care of it sometime.
But he thought better of it. I like that.
She says that book's like The Fifth Season by N.K. Jemisin, that she compared it to that.
I have another one you'll like.
It's like on par with that. Like, it's that good. Like, I would I would say it's not like similar in storyline necessarily, mm-hmm. but it's definitely like
feeling
good, and it's an epic fantasy that like.
I'm reading one that's probably one of the best sci-fi's I've ever read in a while. It's A Memory Called Empire.
Ooh. It's
just really, really good.
Who's the author?
Arkady Martin. She's new to the kind of sci-fi world, and she's getting a huge amount of acclaim for what she did in this book. So,
Empire. What's it called?
A Memory Called Empire.
Okay.
I've got a response, so you'll have it in the text.
You'll get it in writing.
Yeah. I'll have my people call your people.
He'll take care of it.
Yeah. Okay, so my second pick is a nonfiction as well. It's called Braiding Sweetgrass. Indigenous Wisdom, Scientific Knowledge, and the Teachings of Plants. So the author is Robin Wall Kimmerer. She is a plant biologist. And she wrote this book. Every chapter just kind of explores sort of one like aspect of culture and compares it to one aspect of biology or plant ecology. It's really cool. My favorite chapter is the one where, so she's moving to a new town, a new state with her two daughters. Her husband just left the family, and her daughters only had four requests for what kind of house they want. You know, they wanted like two trees that were big enough for tree houses because they can't have the same one. They have to have their own.
Oh my God.
They wanted a pond they could swim in, and they wanted a purple bedroom and blah, blah, blah. So she finds this house that, you know, has great trees. It has a purple bedroom, and it has a pond that has been overgrown with what's called eutrophication, where it becomes so like full of life that it's like all murky and, you know, just full of like plants and bugs and things like that. It's not swimmable. And she, you know, she says, I am an ecologist and I want to be a good mom. So I am going to, you know, clean up this pond and make it swimmable for my daughters. And the whole chapter is just talks about how she spent years and years, just hours a day down at that pond, you know, pulling out all of the, you know, the plants and the bugs and everything. And, you know, she tried to, you know, save as many creatures as she could. And she used all of the muck that she raked out of there. She used it for fertilizer for her garden, so it wasn't like going to waste. And by the time her girls were in college, it was swimmable. And it's just such a beautiful story of her just like, I'm a good mom. I can be a good mom to my daughters, and I can show them my love through this labor that I'm doing to create a swimming hole for them. But also I'm a mother to the earth. Like I am I am altering this ecosystem for all of these, you know, life forms. And like she, you know, meditates on that while she's working on it. It's just such a beautiful chapter. I was like, I want to reread this chapter over and over again. It was really great. So that's Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer.
Okay, my second pick is Ilatsoe by Darcy Little Badger. This is a YA book set in modern times, but in the world of this book, there's a little bit of magic sprinkled into this world. And this book was really, I thought, just so cute. Like, it's a YA book that is basically a girl detective story. And the main character is Ellie, or Ilatsoe is her full name. And she can commune with ghosts. So she actually, her dog Kirby dies and she has raised him, his spirit from the dead. So now her dog is a ghost dog and she's like teaching him tricks like fetch so that the ball is like being carried and it only looks like the ball is levitating because he's a ghost. So that's kind of how the book starts. But then also as a ghost, Kirby can also sense when someone dies, someone close to their family. And so he freaks out one day and it turns out that her cousin Trevor, who is an adult, married with a baby, has died. And the circumstances around his death, which is labeled as an accident, seem suspicious to Ellie. And so she and her friend Jay go on this sort of quest to find out the answers around his death, which they believe was a murder. And there's just a lot of magic in this world. Like there are vampires, and some vampires are good and some are just trying to cause trouble. Like there's one part, what I love is that how much of indigenous culture and history she weaves into the book. Along with the magic. So there's one scene, and this isn't a spoiler, but there's one scene where this vampire shows up somewhere and is trying to like, you know, cause a ruckus. And Ellie's mom says, "You're on Apache land and this is our home and you're not welcome in our home." And a vampire cannot enter a person's home unwelcome. And so the vampire starts like burning and is dying basically unless they leave. So it's just like this really great blend of, you know, vampire mythology with Apache traditions. And so I loved it. I loved Ellie, the character. I loved her relationship with her parents and her family and her friends. It was also nice to read a YA book that wasn't about romance. You know, there's really not a love story, which there's nothing wrong with YA romance. I just feel like a lot of YA is focused on that. And this book was just, she's just a, you know, a girl trying to find out the truth about her cousin's death. And her mom's like, please don't raise your cousin from the dead. You should not be raising humans. That's bad. Bad things will happen. And so she's like, fine, but it's really hard because he keeps coming to me in these dreams. It's just, yeah. So I loved it. It was different, you know? That's A Lapse Away by Darcy Little Badger.
That sounds really good. And I agree about YA romance. It can be really good, but also like sometimes it gets shoehorned into a story that doesn't need it. So right. It's good that they just try to do that.
There was something nostalgic about reading this book. Like it reminded me of a book I would have read at that age or that would have been in the library. And because I don't know if I'm just imagining this, but I feel like a lot of the YA books that were around when I was that age, there wasn't really a YA, you know, category back then, but there wasn't a lot of romance from what I remember. So it kind of felt like nostalgic and also wholesome in a way, even though there was a lot about murder and vampires. I think the author has stated officially that the main character is asexual, but that's not really part of the story. So, but it was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think back to, like, I'm thinking of, like, Where the Red Fern Grows and, like, YA books like that that are just, you know, young people having adventures and living life.
Yeah. Oh, the other thing is her friend Jay, he is kind of her, like, the Watson to her Sherlock, like, her sidekick, but he's just so supportive of her and just, like, so, like, you know, you know what you're doing. I'm here to help. I'll do it. You know, it was just like, that was a nice, like, representation of a boy being kind of like the sidekick to the girl detective and just like being her friend and being supportive. I loved it.
Nice.
That all sounds right. So good.
Yeah, Kelly, you'd really like it, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Fortunately, I'm not on a book buying ban, so... Also, I just want to say, like, seriously, it's been 2 weeks and you've stuck to it, and that's amazing, Rachel, because I stick to it for like 10 minutes.
Yeah. I'm really impressed.
I went to the library yesterday, so
I do think if I could go and browse in a library, I might not feel the need to buy as many books as I've been buying, but for us it's just still pickup. Okay, Kelly, do you have a third pick?
I do. Okay. Indian No More by Charlene Willing McManus. And it is called that because it is set during the 50s, which is when Indian is the word that was used. So they make that clear in the text. And I wanted to make it clear here, too. Like, obviously, we know that's not a word that you use, you know, but anyway, so it is actually, it's a novel and middle grade, but it's based on the author's, like, real life. And the government have, they basically have decided, oh, hey, this land you have is super nice. We want it. It's not yours anymore. And by the way, we're also revoking your tribal citizenship. So you're not actually Indians anymore. You're Americans. Oh. So awesome. Have fun. Get off my land. Bye. So basically, because they don't have a ton of money, they can't like buy different land in the area, which is what some of their neighbors were doing. And even though they say Indians, it is so hard for me to actually say that. But like some people were able to buy different land in the area and were able to stay. Her family was not able to, so they end up moving to LA. And it is their family's first time like seeing people who aren't Indigenous. So they're meeting like Black people for the first time. And it's really interesting because like their Black neighbors are awesome, fantastic people. And their white neighbors, they're usually not capital R racist, although there's some of that too. But there's a lot of little R racism. Like they have the main character, her name is Regina, and they do a big Thanksgiving pageant at their school, and Regina gets to play an Indigenous person, and they put like ridiculous war paint on her, and it basically looks like, okay, so imagine you basically give a five-year-old a marker and your face. Mm-hmm. And like what your face would look like, that's what they did to her. And they have like the white people say things like, oh, you know, it's so great that you're here. Thank you for giving us your food. We're going to make you civilized now. Yeah. And that was part of the Thanksgiving pageant, and like civilized was used. And I don't think she really thought about it until she realized that her parents and her little sister and her grandmother were all in the audience watching it. And then even though it wasn't her shame to carry, she felt absolutely ashamed about it.
Oh.
And it was so powerful. And it's not even 200 pages. It is this incredibly, incredibly short book. Mm-hmm. And I think it's actually under 100 pages, but there's a lot of supplemental material because the author's trying to write this. And she ended up dying, I think, of cancer before it was complete.
Oh, wow.
But she had a co-author who finished it with support from her family. And it's this little tiny story, but it's so powerful. And her dad gets this big promotion at work, and her family is so proud because like now they can afford to buy a car and they can do all this stuff. And he's like, we're going to go to the best restaurant in town. And they're all so excited to go to this restaurant, and they can eat whatever they want, you know, like anything on the menu. And he's like, my coworkers who are now beneath me, like in terms of the hierarchy, you know, like they say, this is the best restaurant, so here's where we're going to go. And because the people in the town had never met Native people before, Indigenous people before, they didn't register what they were. They just knew not white. So they're basically like, we don't serve Mexicans here. And like the grownups are just getting ready to leave. And Regina's just like just basically turns around and just yells at the top of her lungs, we're Indians. And it's funny and really sad how, you know, it's like, that's what struck her. It's like, you're being racist against the wrong group.
Yeah.
you know, like,
wow,
it's so good. All three of mine are just like these totally different, very amazing books. So mm-hmm. I'm grateful we did this episode.
Me too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's, it's interesting you talked about the Indian versus Indigenous or Native American. I mean, like my in-laws are Native, and the reservation that is up in the town where my husband grew up is called Indian Island, and like they still use the term Indian. And in the book, Winter Counts, there's a part where they're talking to this guy, this white guy in Denver, and they're asking if he'd seen someone, and they were like, tall Indian guy. And he's like, I think you mean Native American. So I do think there is that sort of maybe gatekeeping of terminology. I do think that as white people, we shouldn't use the term Indian, for right. sure. But I think in that culture, they still use it. And yeah,
I just wanted to, almost like reclaiming.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, maybe.
Or just, yeah. I remember going to a talk by someone when I was in college, because Rachel and I both went to the University of Maine, which is built on Native land. Mm-hmm. And there was a talk that I went to, and one of the things that he said that really stuck with me was, because there was this conversation about the correct terms to use. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a panel actually. And they were like, I would prefer you refer to me by my tribe. I'm a Penobscot. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I hadn't, you know, thought about that, but that makes sense. You know, it's not like all Native Americans are a monolith.
No, that's a good point. Yeah. Cause there's another scene in the book where they're eating at a restaurant, and there are these white ladies sitting next to them at a table next to them. And we're like, oh, are you Native? And one of the characters, she's like, we're Sioux. And the main character in his head notes, like, she uses the term Sioux instead of Lakota. I think just because that kind of will like stop the questions, because I think people would be like, oh, what's Lakota? Or people don't know that as... Right. as much, which I thought was interesting.
Right.
So
fascinating.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
I'm learning a lot.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Yeah.
Do you have another recommendation, Rach?
Oh, I do. This is sort of a blanket recommendation for Louise Erdrich's books. I've read a few of hers. I read Roundhouse and...
Feature Home of the Living God.
Well, that, yeah, I was going to mention that one, but the other one I was thinking of, Love Medicine.
Oh, right.
So Roundhouse and Love Medicine, I read a longer time ago. So I don't remember them that much, but I remember I really liked them. Mm-hmm. And then more recently, I think a couple of years ago, maybe I read Feature Home of the Living God. And that was really good. It's about this woman who she lives on tribal land, and it's kind of interesting because I almost don't remember the premise of the plot, but I remember her driving around, and help me, Julia.
I read it too. I co-signed that recommendation. It's a dystopian novel. And she's writing in her journal to her unborn child. She's 4 months pregnant. And basically women in this dystopian world of the United States, women are starting to give birth to primitive humans. So Neanderthals, I guess. And it's just like, you don't know if you're pregnant, if you're going to give birth to one of these more primitive humans. And so there's this registry. It's very Handmaid's Tale. And so, like, women are in danger of being captured by the government. And she, like, sees this scene in the parking lot of a grocery store of a woman being, like, dragged away from her husband and child. So she's, like, leaving not only to escape the government, but she also wants to find her birth mom who is a Indigenous woman. And she, because I think she was adopted. the main character.
You're right. She was. And yeah, she's trying to hide her pregnancy.
Right.
And find her indigenous family.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And kind of find out more about her origin story in hopes that that will help her.
Right.
Figure out what, who, you know, her baby, you know, yeah, it's good. I've that's the only Louise Erdrich I've read, and I've heard that one is different than the other books. Yeah.
It is. It's, her other books aren't dystopian. They're more right. realistic fiction.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. I want to say there's a connection to her in Carrie. One of the chapters, she's in this writing group, and I'm going to get to the connection in a second, but there is a character in the group who keeps, I mean, a character. There's a person in the group, and his stories are all, like, violent, and he keeps killing off people who are really obviously characters based on other people in the group. So, you know, like, there would be this girl, say, who he would describe, and it would sound like a person in the group, and then it's like, oh, and she got shot. And the person that he clearly hated the most was Toni Jensen, the author, and he killed her in every story. And in one story, he, like, the character who was a stand-in for himself was driving a Ford Escort, and he hit her with it. And then he backed up, and he hit her again. And then he backed up, and he hit her again. And I think he did it one more time. Wow. And she was, like, I think a couple minutes later, somebody said something to her, and she's like, oh, I'm sorry, I only answer to Ford Escort now. But one of the things that her professor said was that, you know, like, she was focusing on indigenous issues, and he's like, we already have Louise Erdrich, only he pronounced her last name wrong. And, you know, she's like, our stories are not at all the same. Like, just because we're both women who are indigenous writing about indigenous issues, like, they're totally different. Mm-hmm. And the fact that there's already one person doing it doesn't That's mean enough. Other people. Yeah. Like, you would never say to Paul Tremblay and Grady Hendrix, like, I'm sorry, we already have a Stephen King.
Right.
You don't get to write horror anymore. Like, we got that. It's covered. It's good.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think her last name is pronounced Erdrich, not rhyming with witch. And, like, she said that was the thing that almost bothered her the most, the fact that he's, you know, putting down her and really kind of Louise Erdrich. And he's like, she's like, he didn't even know her name.
Right.
Really. Yeah. I want to apologize to the listeners. I didn't know how to pronounce it. I don't think I've ever heard it pronounced out loud. So I just went by what it was spelled.
I think her dad is German, actually.
Yep.
I think it's a German.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you don't hear it said, you know, you don't always know how to pronounce it. I'm pretty sure I pronounced the author that we spoke about earlier, the author of The Death of Vivek Oji, and I probably just butchered that name too. I mean, I don't listen to audiobooks, and I probably should, because I bet they say the author's name right in that.
Right.
You know.
I feel like they mostly do, but I feel like I've heard it said wrong before on an audiobook, and I can't remember which one it was.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, mine was kind of off topic. It was an author's name being spelled wrong in a blurb, so.
I just want to give a quick shout out to Eric Nunnally, author of Blood for the Sun and All the Dead Men, which is the Alexander Smith series. We interviewed him this summer, so we will link to that episode. He is an author who is Black and has Indigenous ancestry as well, and that's his main character's ancestry, and it's very central to the storyline, which, if you don't know, he writes this urban fantasy series, and the main character is Alexander Smith, who is a 150-year-old shapeshifter who is losing his memory and is the son, I think, of a man who escaped slavery and also a Saskatchewan Indigenous woman, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then he ends up becoming a shapeshifter, and now it's modern times, and there's vampires, and there's all these things happening. He's working with the Boston PD to solve crimes that just have no explanation. So they need someone who's in the kind of magic underground world to figure it out. Yeah, I don't read a lot of urban fantasy, but I really enjoyed his book, and he did a lot of unique things with it. Especially the memory loss was just like the writing style and how he used that part of his character's reality was a really unique thing I'd never seen in another book. So I guess shout out to Eric Donnelly.
I like that too.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that brings us to the end of the episode.
No.
I know. This is a good one. I'm really glad we did this. I've discovered a new favorite author with Rebecca Roanhorse, I have to say. It blew my mind. I'm excited.
I don't have to read that. And I really want to read Alatsoe. Mm-hmm. That sounds really good.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
So thank you, everybody, for listening. If you want to follow us on social media, we are at WYSR_podcast on Twitter and Instagram. Email us at whatyoushouldreadpodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to follow along with our book club, which our first book will be The Book of Two Ways by Jodi Picoult, if you want to read along. And yeah, make sure you follow us on Goodreads, because we post about every book that we talk about, as well as we list them in the show notes. So,
yeah. And now you know what you should read.
You're welcome.